Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Tuesday, October 22nd, 2019. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting. And Leaky Black Matt Norlander is here with me, and we are now just 2 weeks away from the start of the regular season that comes on November 5th. Norlander and I both going to be in New York City for the Champions Classic. And now that the Associated Press preseason poll is out, it's official. Top four teams in the country, or at least the four highest ranked teams in the preseason AP poll, they're going to be inside New York's Madison Square Garden. It'll be number one Michigan State versus number two Kentucky, number three Kansas versus number four Duke. So it'll be four Hall of Fame coaches and the four highest rated teams under one roof in Midtown Manhattan. Should be awesome. Norlander, you fired up? Are you fired up or are you fired up?
I'm always fired up, and that is just a great thing for college hoops. We both expressed similar sentiment on Twitter over this. Obviously, the Champions Classic is a great event every season because you have four marquee blue blood level programs there. But to have one, two, three, and four, Parrish, I'm vamping this off the top of my head. I think this is the first time that those four teams have been 1, 2, 3, and 4 in the rankings, and I know for sure it is the first time we have had 1 versus 2 and 3 versus 4 to kick off the start of the college basketball season on opening night. So that is a great windfall for college basketball that they just happened to land 1 through 4 in that way, Michigan State, Kentucky, Duke, and Kansas.
And yet it's very different from a personnel perspective, I think, because it feels like even though we didn't have 1, 2, 3, 4 last season, it felt like we had more star power last year with R.J. Barrett, Zion Williamson, Cam Reddish. At that time, people were talking about them as and I guess they went on to become like three top 10 picks, three lottery picks. But there was some thought, maybe it started after the season, that they could actually go 1-2-3 in the 2019 NBA draft. They didn't, but they were still lottery picks. We had individual like stardom, whereas I'm not sure that applies here. Even if we've got the four best teams in the country, I don't know that, you know, like Michigan State's the number one team in the country. I don't know that they've got a lottery pick. It's just sort of a unique set of circumstances.
It is, and we now have, I mean, we've got interesting stuff with Michigan State that we'll get to in a few here regarding their roster. But overall, yeah, we are, as we record this, I mean, we are straight 2 weeks out. I can't get here fast enough, and that night will bring about a lot of intrigue. And I think regardless of who wins, we'll have our takeaways, and they'll lend certain storylines to kind of, you know, to play with right off the bat there. But the really cool thing about it is I feel like because of Josh Langford's injury, Michigan State isn't as heavy of a favorite, as clear-cut of a number one as it was when we were presuming he would be back and healthy. Sooner than later, that's not the case. And so if Michigan State were to lose on that opening night of the season, and regardless of what happens with Duke, and we'll get to them in a few, none of those teams, if they lose, if they get blown out, remember what Duke did to Kentucky last season, I don't think we'll be walking away from that saying, like, this team isn't what we thought they would be, and we need to really have second thoughts on their national championship outlook. I think it'll just be a great, fun way to start the season on November 5th.
Yeah, to my point, I just went and looked at Jonathan Givony's 2020 NBA mock draft over at ESPN.com. There's not a projected top 10 pick that it's going to be at the Champions Classic. The highest, the best prospect that'll be at the Champions Classic relative to Jonathan's 2020 mock draft that's published right now at ESPN.com would be a Khalil Whitney, who is slotted 12th here in his 2020 mock draft. So whereas last year we had the number one pick, we had the number three pick, we had Cam Reddish. We had PJ Washington. You're not going to have that kind of NBA talent at the Champions Classic, but it should still be terrific. And that is, even despite the news that broke earlier today, Tom Izzo telling reporters, as you noted, Josh Langford is going to be out until at least January. Now, I don't think this is a killer, because they were very good without him last season. He only played 13 games, but he did average 15 points per game in those 13 games. I know that some people were making the argument as the season progressed that Michigan State was better without Joshua Langford, and I don't know whether that's true or not, but clearly he's a veteran. He is he's accomplished. He's proven. And now we know the preseason number one team in the country is not going to have him at least until January, and perhaps even deeper into the season. Who knows? If his foot doesn't respond, maybe not at all. That is an interesting development. Again, just 2 weeks out from the season.
It is, and this is a major bummer for Langford. By all accounts, just a tremendous man with a great outlook on life, who has just suffered a bizarre, mysterious, can't figure it out foot ailment, and now for him to be gone until January. For me, when you look at what Michigan State brings back, if you told me that Langford was out definitely for the entire season, I would still, GP, I'd say that Michigan State should be the preseason number one, but this brings them closer to the rest of the group with the Kansases and Kentuckys and what have you there, particularly because when he's healthy, really solid shooter, really good two-way player, a nice defender that fills them out nicely. This is just a complete bummer. Tom Izzo, I guess, was close to tears when he was just relaying what was happening with Langford and the fact that he has to be out until January at the earliest. Michigan State fans will remember that last season, the diagnosis and prognosis on Langford's injury initially seemed much shorter than it wound up being. I mean, when he went down, the belief was not that he was going to be out for the rest of the season, and then lo and behold, that wound up being the case there. So hopefully he can get healthy as soon as possible. It'd be great to see a Michigan State team which, when fully healthy, Parrish could potentially set up as one of the two or three best in the history of Izzo's program. They've never been number one in the preseason poll until this year in the history of the program. Would like to see him get healthy sooner than later. But yeah, that's a significant and major injury. Big news here on Tuesday, 2 weeks out from the start of the season.
So the nightcap at the Champions Classic, it will be number one Michigan State against number two Kentucky. The early game will be number three Kansas against number four Duke. And I bring that up because you published your 1 to 353 rankings at CBS Sports earlier today. And you've got Duke down at number 10, which is lower than the AP poll. It is, I believe, lower than pretty much anybody I've seen anywhere. Why do you hate Mike Krzyzewski's Blue Devils so much?
I'm just a sell. I'm going to sell on him a little bit here. Admittedly, as I write in the post, with the 1 to 353, I'm obviously trying to do as accurate a job as I can at establishing where these teams, I think, rank when fully healthy over the course of the entire season college basketball. I like Trey Jones, but I want to see how good he can be offensively. And then this class, Parrish, this freshman class that they've got, that they're bringing in, Vernon Carey Jr., Matthew Hurt, Cassius Stanley, Wendell Moore, good group. I'm not convinced that it's going to be the kind of group that keeps Duke in the top five of the polls all season long. I just have some hesitation on how strong defensively 1 through 5 that team will be and how reliable offensively. How much shooting are they going to have? I can very much see a scenario in which Duke is a very good team fighting for a 2 seed and 3 seed, but they're not nearly as consistent or dominant as they were a season ago. So I sell a little bit on them. And it's also interesting that Duke was the pick to win the ACC yet again. I think it's been like 6 times in the past 10 seasons this has happened that Duke hasn't won the ACC regular season championship in a decade. So while it's obviously been a top three program across that time span in college basketball, undeniably, when it comes to play within the ACC in the regular season, there's always someone, at least one team beating out Duke there. So yeah, I'll run down my top 10 real quick here. Michigan State 1, obviously. Kansas 2, Kentucky 3. I like that as a top 3 GP, and then I would draw a line. I've got Carolina 4. I admit that I am high. For as low as I am on Duke, I think I might be higher on UNC than anyone. I have that much faith in Cole Anthony. I put Maryland at 5. Shouts to our editor, Adi Joseph. I think he's been waiting for a shout-out on this podcast for a long time. His Terps at 5. I think he's actually disgusted by how much I believe in the Terrapins, as are a lot of Terrapin fans. But I look at their roster, GP, to me. And you're similar, by the way. We'll get to your ranks in a second. I got Florida 6. Shout out to another editor, Adam Silverstein, a UF alum. That was not intentional, but I just realized I put both those teams 5 and 6 back-to-back. Virginia at 7, Gonzaga at 8, Louisville 9, and then Duke at 10.
Yeah, I've got Maryland, I think, 6. So I'm high on them as well. And it's funny, like, Maryland is the I don't want to say the one fan base, but typically if you rate somebody high, the fans are enthusiastic about it. And if you don't rate that team as high as the fans think, then they think you're the dumbest person on the planet. And yet it is Maryland fans who consistently will be like, we're not going to be that good.
I know.
They're like, there's no way we're going to be that good. They just, like I said, I look at what they're bringing back and what they're enrolling. It looks like a easy top 10 team to me. And yeah, I've got them six. That's too high. There's no way we're going to be that good. They fundamentally don't believe in themselves.
They don't. It's actually, it's funny you mentioned that, because before we published the 1-353 on Tuesday, I just said, listen, this is coming soon, about an hour before it published. And in that time I had much Maryland chatter and like tongue in cheek, like, yeah, we might be good enough to get upset in the second round this season. I've got some real optimistic outlook on our team. I think Maryland fans are frustrated with the potential they've seen over the past 6-7 years with Turgeon there, and they haven't lived up to it. But I'm going to stick. I like Stick Smith. I think he will be a top five sophomore in America, and I do think Anthony Cowan will wind up being a top five point guard of value and importance this season. I will ride those two players over all others, but I do like the rest of the roster as well. But yeah, Maryland was one when I was making this list. Once I got to five, I thought, well, who do I want to put here? And I zagged a little bit. You know, I not too much, because you and me might be higher than just about anyone on the Terps there, but I do like them. For the record, they are 16 in the also newly released KenPom rating, so that's not too far behind, but we are a bit higher than most others.
Maryland hasn't been to the Elite Eight since 2002, so it's been a long time since that program has operated at the tip-top of the sport. And certainly haven't done it consistently, although I do believe Mark Turgeon's done a nice job there, replacing Gary Williams. It's just that he hasn't broken through quite the way the fan base would want him to break through. But he's got a team, at least I think so, he's got a team on paper good enough to do it this season. To circle back to Duke real quick, it is true that they don't win ACC regular season titles nearly as often as people predict them to win ACC regular season titles. And I swear to God, if you're one of those nerds who's about to tweet me and say, you know, the ACC doesn't really have a regular season championship, like, just hit delete on it. Nobody wants to hear that. Like, shut up. As long as schools hang banners that say ACC regular season champion, then we're going to talk about ACC regular season championships. They don't win it as often as they're predicted to win it, but they're almost always good. It's why I roll my eyes at the Duke is overrated stuff. Past 10 years, they finished in the top five at KenPom five times, and in the top eight seven times. Their average finish past 10 seasons at KenPom is 7.7. So if you just blindly assume Duke is going to be a top eight team in the country, you're going to be right, at least over the past decade, 70% of the time. You're going to be right way more often than that.
Yeah, and that's why I ultimately put Duke in the top 10, because as I wrote in the little in the capsule there, I thought about going 11, 12, or 13. Beyond that, there's really no case to it. But I did look at the history, obviously take the coach into account, and Trey Jones could be a first-team All-American, so I put him there at 10. History shows that certainly is more likely. Now, you've got him as high as 2. Parrish, I just can't buy that. I cannot look at the roster that Duke has and say that is going to be a top two team in college basketball. I just fall short on that because I'm not as in on the incoming freshman class. And then, like, you know, Jack White, Javon Delorier, are they going to make the kind of jump that they might need to make to validate Duke as a top two team? I'm not quite that certain. But it'll be interesting. And Duke, as always, I mean, I've said many times before, and we'll say it as long as it's applicable, Memphis is the most interesting team in college basketball this season. But from a pure discussion standpoint, Duke is always going to be in that top five, no matter how good or bad or otherwise they are.
Well, Duke goes from having 3 top 10 picks in Zion Williamson, RJ Barrett, Cam Reddish, to having, I'm just referencing Jonathan Givony's mock draft because it's right in front of me, to having 0 projected top 10 picks. But they do have 4 projected top 27 picks, more projected first round picks than anybody else. So I think these things can both be true. Duke is not nearly as star studded, you know, at the top, the top 5 pick perspective, but they've still got really, really good players. They've still got Mike Krzyzewski as the coach. I suspect that they'll be really good again, because they almost always are. But if you wanted to argue they're not a top two team in the country, certainly it's a reasonable thing to argue. As always, we'll see. The only obvious thing, and I guess it's not completely obvious because 5 AP voters went another direction, but I think most conversations start with Michigan State at number 1. And this is before the Josh Langford news, obviously, but Michigan State number 1. And then really the next 3 or 4 teams, we could probably put in just about any order reasonably. And honestly, we might look up week 2 of the AP poll and it all look different, because there's nothing crazy about thinking Kentucky could upset Michigan State and Duke could upset Kansas. I mean, yeah, you know, those things – I don't know that there's that much difference between those four teams on paper, even if I do believe Michigan State on paper should be ranked number one.
I agree. Can I bounce off our just our biggest differences within your top 25 real quick here? Get your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we've got a few here. So these are teams that perish. The biggest ones are Duke 2. I've got Duke 10. You've got Memphis at 7. I've got Memphis at 13. That's not that big. I would note, and listen, I know GP, you talk about him every day, so we don't have to get too hard into this if you don't want. But you've got Memphis 7. I would think that you maybe have Memphis higher than anyone in America. Now that's. Can be validated given the strength of the class and how well they did last year under Penny Hardaway. I don't have them too far behind him. I've got him at 13. I've got Seton Hall at 23. You've got him at 12. Seton Hall's the one team I have in my top 25. When I was done, I thought, I'm probably going to regret this. I might want him up another 3, 4, or 5 spots. And then there's a couple of big ones. You've got Auburn 16. I've got him at 29. I think they lose too much talent year over year to put him into the top 25. And then here's where I think the difference between us on these two teams is going to wind up probably being in the middle. You've got the Tennessee Volunteers, who lost two of probably the 4 or 5 best players in the history of the program. You've got them 19 in the preseason. I've got them 41st. So if you told me at the end of the season the Tennessee winds up with, like, say, a 7 seed, it was closer to that, you know, settling in the 28 to 32 range at KenPom or otherwise, I would totally believe that. There's a few more I want to get to, but I wanted to get to those 5 in particular. Duke, Memphis, Seton Hall, Auburn, Tennessee. Those are the 5 teams you have ranked where I have the most difference in my rankings at the top.
Seth Davis had Memphis number 6 at The Athletic. Special shouts to Seth. But now he has backed off of that in his updated rankings. I think moved Memphis down to maybe 12. And that was the biggest discrepancy between KenPom's preseason ratings and Most Human rankings. When KenPom's preseason ratings came out on Sunday morning, it's got Memphis 50th. In the country, jeez, which obviously is lower than literally any human ranking. Every AP voter's got Memphis in the top 22, as high as 7, as low as 22, but nothing lower than 22. And yet they're 50th at KenPom, which does make me reconsider. You know, I talked about this on the radio yesterday because I'm big on what are recruits who are ranked here usually do as freshmen. Like, I study all of that stuff so that I can have hopefully a pretty good idea of what is usually going to happen with players like this or teams built this way. And the truth is, though, Memphis is such a unique situation that it could be an outlier in the way that Ken's algorithm evaluates teams in the preseason, because it takes into account last season's data to a certain degree. It doesn't doesn't value, sub 30 freshmen nearly as much as maybe a human would value a Boogie Ellis or a Damian Ball or a DJ Jeffries. But it's a unique. How often does the NIT team enroll the number one recruiting class in America? Right. So there's a lot of stuff going on here. But I will say that if you just go back and look at the past 5 years at KenPom's preseason ratings, regardless of why somebody is ranked where they're ranked, the truth is this: teams that start 50th or worse have only earned a top 4 seed in the NCAA tournament one time in the past 5 years. So there's 80 possible spots, and only one time has a top 4 seed been a team that started 50th or worse at KenPom's preseason rating. You want to take a guess who it is? Trivia time!
Oh, gosh.
One time in the past 5 years, a team started 50th or worse and earned a top 4 seed in the NCAA tournament.
How many years? 10 years?
Past 5 years, it's only happened once.
Oh, 5 years.
With an ACC team in 2015.
So would that have been NC State?
No, it was Notre Dame. You'd never guess it. There's no reason for you to guess it.
Okay.
But they started. I don't even remember this team. I don't even know who was on it. they started 70th at KenPom, and they got a 3 seed in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, that's the one that almost beat Kentucky.
Maybe,
You
say so.
That is.
Okay, yeah.
I'm almost positive that is. Yeah, that's the team that almost beat Kentucky, yes.
Okay, so they finished 9th at KenPom, started 70th. So if you're looking for teams that went from 50th or worse to a top four seed, only once in the past 5 years. 50th or worse to a top 15 KenPom finish, only once past 5 years. That's also that same Notre Dame team. 50th or worse and then makes the Sweet 16, it's only happened 9 times in the past 5 years. So only 11.3% of the past 80 Sweet 16 teams started 50th or worse at KenPom. So I know that, depending on perspective, fans like to scream, preseason rankings don't mean anything, and preseason ratings don't mean a thing. But the truth is they're pretty good indicators of what is likely to happen. More evidence being this. 6 of the past 9 national champions were preseason top 5 at KenPom. 7 of the past 9 national champions were preseason top 10 at KenPom. So if you really have dreams of cutting nets on a Monday night, you probably need to be. History shows you need to be in the top 5 preseason KenPom. And if you really want to get a top 4 seed in the NCAA tournament, you really want to go to a Sweet 16, history shows you better be in the top 50 at KenPom. And so that's obviously a big topic of conversation in Memphis. What does that preseason rating should it downsize expectations a little bit? Because, again, I'll make this as simple as I can make it. If you are rated where this Memphis team is rated in the preseason, the odds of you having the type of season most Memphis fans or most human polls think are on tap, it doesn't usually happen. But if you were looking for a comp, I thought this was interesting. LSU last year started 48th at KenPom. They win the SEC. They go to the Sweet 16. They get a top four seed in the NCAA tournament. And that team was built a lot like the Memphis team. It was coming off of an NIT and enrolling 2 5-star prospects. Same thing as Memphis, coming off of an NIT, enrolling 2 5-star prospects. So that might be the closest comp. But either way, I thought the preseason numbers were interesting.
That is interesting. Wisdom of the polls, wisdom of the crowds there with a lot of that stuff that you referenced. Sticking in the American real quick here, I've got Cincinnati 12th. You have Cincinnati unranked. If you did a top 39 and one, I'm not even sure if you would go that high. I got a couple teams here that I am aberrationally high on and willing to be very wrong on. But, hey, the Wofford principle is always in play here. Just remember that, Parrish. USL are on Cincinnati just because they lose Cronin. Got to the tournament way more often than not there. They bring back a really good player, but maybe not enough on the roster there. Just I wanted your thoughts as someone who, you know, not just when the season ends, but, you know, 5-6 times during the offseason, you reevaluate the top 25 and one, and you update it as results, transfers, all this stuff merits it. That's my highest-ranked team, the Cincinnati Bearcats at 12, that you do not have ranked out of your 26, that's all.
Yeah, I would have them in the top 35. I do think losing Mick matters, and I'm a believer in John Brannan. I think he's going to be good there, but, like, Mick was really one of the most consistent winners in college basketball over the past decade or so. I know that he didn't bounce it into the second weekend nearly as often as Cincinnati fans wanted, but he was rock solid despite having rosters that did not usually suggest what he was about to do was a likely scenario. So I do think losing Mick matters, and losing, you know, you bring back Jaron Cumberland, but you do lose some key pieces. You could reasonably have them in the top 25. I would have them in my top 35. I do think top 15 is pretty high based on everything I just said.
Yeah, no, it's definitely high. I've almost got a feeling that while I'm not predicting Cincinnati to win a national championship or anything like that, nothing like that, I think we might have a Larry Coker situation like with Miami football. He inherited Butch Davis's roster, almost 20 years ago, and came in and was really successful. I like his style with the roster that Cincinnati has with Cumberland, so that's why I'm high on them. Another team I'm way high on, I'm higher on than anyone by far. This team only received one vote in the preseason AP Top 25. That's those Providence Friars. I've got them 15th. You've got them unranked. I think 1 through 7, Providence has a chance to have the best roster in the Big East, led by Alpha Diallo. But they got my man, LuWayne Pipkins, okay? And if he's healthy, he'll be playing point for point for Providence. That was the one issue with this team and the reason why they did not make it to the NCAA tournament last season. Cooley had gone the previous 5 seasons, which was a Providence record there. So I was aggressive on them. I have them. I actually think that Providence and Villanova will tie in the Big East, and then Seton Hall will finish a game behind. If I'm, you know, blindly trying to project here, I think that those three will clearly be the three best teams. Although, shouts to Xavier fan, because you are already coming at me not just for having Xavier a little too low. I've got the X-Men at 36 overall, but they're like, we weren't that different than Providence last year, and you've got them 20 spots ahead of us. I hear you, Xavier fan. We'll see. I think you're going to be much better. Couple more. You don't have Texas ranked. I've got them 25th. That's minuscule. So for all I know, you'd have them 27 or 28. I do buy Shaka's team this year. Good freshman there, Will Baker. It is a we touched on it on the previous podcast. I do think it is a make or break year for Shaka Smart, but I think that they will get to the tournament with ease. And then the only other team, Parrish, and you can go wherever you want with any of these if you like. The only other team that that I have higher than you that we both have ranked, you've got the Buckeyes of Ohio State 21, which I think is reasonable. I think, admittedly, a little bit aggressive with them. I've got them 14th overall. Caleb Weston, probably the best post player. DJ Carton will be a really good freshman. And I think defensively, see, I really like what Holtman has with this team, how much he's able to bring back. I just think we'll look up, and they're not going to be a sexy team, but I think Ohio State Parrish is going to win a lot of games, 65-61, and they're going to climb up the Big Ten standings and wind up being a top 10 defensive team nationally.
I'm a little lower on Xavier as well. Like, Xavier's the one team in the AP poll that I do not have in the top 25 and one. They're 19th in the AP poll. I don't have them ranked. And so it's interesting. You and I are both low on Xavier. Happy to be wrong. Yeah. Happy to be wrong about Xavier, but you and I do not have them in our top 25 or top 26. They're 19th in the AP poll. The teams that I am higher on than the AP poll is, I got Tennessee 19th, as you pointed out. They would be 28th in the AP poll. I've got Davidson 23rd. They would be 31st in the AP poll. But the truth is, by the time AP voters submit their ballots, I don't mean to suggest they're copying me or you or anybody in particular, but I do think it does become dating back to April, help sort of frame the way people are going to vote. And then it does become a little bit of a groupthink exercise. Not completely, but a little bit of that.
I think that is true. I just think it's unavoidable. Think about because a lot of the voters will cover college football and college basketball. And so if you're in the midst of covering college football from basically GP end of July until now, and you know your vote was due, say, a week ago or whatever, you're like, all right, well, I got to check in here. Let me check out A, B, C, and D to see where these teams are at. And I think that can also play a factor. I'm glad that you mentioned Davidson, because first of all, they're the highest ranked team on my list that did not make the tournament last year. I'm pretty sure Providence is. Davidson is 19th, so they're right behind him. Parrish, this roster brings back a ton. I mean, Keelan Grady is the better pro prospect, and yet John Axel Gunmanson won A-10 Player of the Year. Those are two of the three best players in the league. I don't see how this isn't a top three team of Bob McKillop's tenure. I see no conceivable reason how you could not have Davidson as a preseason top 25, given how much they bring back from a really solid team that, it just missed out on the tournament, but won 24 games a season ago. I think we are in close to lockstep with those two teams specifically, Davidson and VCU out of the A-10, and then I'll just mention that Dayton's right there too. I mean, I've got Dayton 37. You're going to be at A-10 Media Day later this week. It's an optimistic time for that conference, because those three teams, I think, will all be in the NCAA tournament, and the league, after it was way down last season, as you well know, is truly, I don't feel like I'm gassing it up. I'm speaking honestly after talking to coaches and researching. Like, the Atlantic 10, I think, will make an aggressive bounce back, quite possibly to be like a top eight league in college basketball this season.
Yeah, I mean, VCU and Davidson basically bring back all of their important pieces from quality teams. You know, Kellen Grady, if he's healthy, I think is the best player in the league, even if he's not the reigning league most valuable player. So yeah, I'm high on VCU, high on Davidson, and yes, I think Dayton could be good as well. I mentioned that I believe the AP poll, at least the preseason one, does become a little bit of groupthink, but not for Luke DeCock. Did you see his ballot? Raleigh News and Observer.
I did not, but are you doing a preseason version of the poll attacks here?
No, I don't do those. I used to. I don't do them anymore, because the poll attacks are rooted in there's no way you can do what you just did based on the data that is available. You can do anything you want in the preseason, and you might end up being right. There was one year where I wrote somebody had Kansas ranked number one and in the preseason. And I even I wrote a comment about how ridiculous it was. I think I even called Bill Self, and Bill's like, there's no way we should get a first vote, right? But then they ended up you looked up at some point in the season, they were really number one in the country, right? So I just said, you know what? I'm going to wait until we have results before I start making fun of people's ballots. But the reason I bring it up, he has Missouri ranked 13th on his ballot. He is the only voter who has Missouri on a ballot. He's got them all the way up at 13. You've got Missouri down at number 82. Nobody, wow. I think at KenPom they're 39, so maybe it's not the craziest thing in the world. But do you think that's a mistake, or do you? And I don't mean right or wrong. Do you think he mistyped, or do you think he actually wanted Missouri at number 13?
I don't listen. Again, it's preseason. Luke is a tremendous reporter, by the way. Does a great job. I have a very hard time justifying Missouri as a top 40 team, let alone top 25, let alone top 50. 15 and 17 a season ago, I get that. I don't think the roster is overwhelmingly impressive. Was his ballot the one that stood out most? Because I'm a huge seller. I saw Missouri play a few times last season. They obviously had major issues on the offensive end. I know Tigers fans are optimistic that they're going to make good strides this season, but I actually think they're going to remain relatively static overall. But that's eye popping. That's more egregious than me buying heavy on Providence at 15 there. But you know what? If we look up January 20th, and Missouri is ranked 19th in the polls, then more power to Luke. But that one's just, I'm all for people, by the way, doing this, I guess, in general, though. Taking a little chance. Go ahead.
Looking at his speed, and he hasn't addressed it at all, which, I mean, I don't know. But what it suggests, I'm confident he's been asked, why do you have Missouri ranked? I'm confident the fact that he hasn't, he hasn't referenced Missouri at all on Twitter, which would lead me to think that maybe it was a mistake. Otherwise, you'd jump out there and try to defend it, wouldn't you?
I would think so. I mean, I don't know. I've never been an AP voter, so I don't know how the process is. I don't know if there's a drop-down menu. Missouri was next to – Missouri State's going to be better than Missouri. I mean, Missouri State, I have 69th, which is nice, in my rankings. And, I mean, there isn't a coach in that league that doesn't think that Missouri State isn't by far the best team in the Valley this season, could potentially – breakthrough to be an 8 or 9 level seed. I mean, because they bring in so many good transfers there. They've gotten better. They've gotten older. Dana Ford has a strong team. Missouri, I've got nothing against you. I mean, I long, and we'll get to the resurrection of a very important series here in a few, but I'm just not seeing how the Tigers can be validated as a preseason top 25 team, because the SEC is also going to be still pretty good this season. And whereas you even have some schools that have coaching changes, I think Alabama is going to be better this season than it was last, despite a coaching change. I think Texas A&M is going to be better this season than it was last, despite a coaching change there. So I just don't see Missouri getting into a position where it's going to be the 6 or 7 best team in that league.
You mentioned the SEC and perhaps getting better with coaching changes. You look at that stable of coaches now, and I know it didn't win our Candid Coaches series when we asked, more than 100 college coaches what league from top to bottom has the best stable of coaches now. I think the ACC was the leading vote getter, but I think my vote would go to the SEC. You look up and down that league, it's almost nothing but accomplished guys. Really, I mean, I think maybe this is the way I would put it. The SEC has fewer questionable coaches than any other league in America.
Probably. I mean, feels like them or maybe Big Ten, maybe. It's close. It's real close.
Yeah, I would. How about this? And this is also interesting. With the some of it is because the coaches who are in place are awesome. Some of it is because the coaches in place are brand new, so they're not at risk of getting fired. But I don't think there'll be a single coaching change in the SEC at the end of this season, regardless of what happens this season, unless it's NCAA related with Auburn or NCAA related with LSU. Short of that, I don't think any coach is in danger of losing his job, which is a weird place for a league that size to be.
Yeah, in fact, I've got another thought on the SEC, but first, check this out.
Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third-row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
All right, so GP, just real quick, since we're hitting on this topic here, because I did specifically look at a few leagues once I had assembled the rankings there, and I have LSU at 40. I've got Bama at 33. So overall, when you look at and Tennessee's the only, and I've got Tennessee at 41. So, you know, a mild seller on them, but the SEC is in a position here where Kentucky and Florida will punch it out for the top of the league. Auburn, LSU, Tennessee, Mississippi State, Georgia might have the best, might. We'll see. Might have the best freshman, America, and Anthony Edwards there. Buzz now steps in at Texas A&M. I'm already regretting how low I have Kermit Davis and Ole Miss in the rankings there, because he has overachieved with teams practically his entire career. And then even like South Carolina, I have down in the 80s. Frank Martin did tie for fourth in the league last season. So it's just one guy after another in that conference. And even like, you know, I'm selling on Arkansas in year one under Must, you know, a lot of roster turnover. How are they going to do with the transfers and all that? But if he gets it going there, I mean, it's just a super intriguing conference overall. And because of that, while I think Kentucky and Florida are the clear top, like a throwback to, you know, 2007 here, but they're the clear top, I just think we're guaranteed to have five or six really good teams in the conference, but it almost just feels like a big old stew there, and you can kind of pull out the teams. For me, it's harder to differentiate really with any sort of true confidence how the pecking order will be 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Yeah, I think everybody would have Kentucky, Florida. And in fact, our expert picks at CBS Sports on the SEC preview, everybody had Kentucky, Florida 1, 2 in some order. And then after that, it gets a little mixed up. And you mentioned Kentucky and Florida are going to, you know, bang it out at the top of the league. And I think that's true. But I did notice the KenPom projections have Kentucky winning the SEC by 3 games. They got Kentucky going 14-4 in the SEC, Florida and Tennessee finishing second at 11-7. So I'll be shocked if anybody wins that league by 3 games. But I did notice that Ken's preseason ratings projections have Kentucky really running away with the SEC regular season title.
Kentucky at 2, Florida at 10. Real quick, I'll spout these off because the KenPom ratings came out Sunday. AP came out Monday. Then my 1 to 353 came out here on Tuesday. Here's 1 through 25. Tell me if anything sticks out to you as being wrong or abnormal. MSU, Kentucky, Louisville, Duke 4, Virginia 5. Then UNC, Purdue at 7. Nova, Gonzaga, and Kansas fill out the top 10. You go down, you have Ohio State at 11. That's higher than even I have them. Florida, Baylor, Florida State at 14. Texas Tech, reigning runner-up at 15. The Terps, as we said earlier, at 16. Marquette, without the Hauser brothers, at 17. Xavier right behind them at 18. The Vols and Seton Hall fill out top 20. The next five are Michigan, who will be without Franz Wagner for at least 4 to 6 weeks. We learned that yesterday. Auburn at 22. VCU, 23. Arizona 24 and Oklahoma at 25. I got a couple surprises in there, but to you, if you had to narrow it down to one or two, what stands out the most in terms of what you didn't expect to see when you opened up the tab on, say, Sunday night?
Well, I don't know what I expected to see, but I think Purdue's too high. But I understand why Purdue would be that high. Like, I had Ken on the radio show yesterday, and one of the points he made is that his algorithm, it values teams that are good. You know, like if you've been good, it on some level, it assumes that you will be again. And so that's the explanation for, at least it's part of the explanation for Purdue. Purdue has consistently been good in recent years. So his model is assuming that Purdue will be good again. And I do think they will be. I've got them in the top 20, but I don't know that any human ranking would have Purdue in the top 10, at least not one that I've seen. And then Maryland, that seems too low. You know, I've got Maryland 6. The KenPom preseason ratings have Maryland at 16. And then Florida State, I would say too high at 14. But again, they've been consistently good. So perhaps that explains that. And Marquette losing with the Hauser brothers, I think they're preseason top 10. Without them, I don't think they're preseason top 30, maybe. Yeah. So the idea that they would be 17th, that's a little high. But again, this is all – you know, Ken, I think even Ken would tell you there are going to be outliers, even things that when it spits it out, he goes, I don't love that. But he just sort of lives with the totality of it because it is, I mean, history shows it does a good job of telling you who's going to be good and who's not going to be good, even if there are minor disagreements you might have with very specific teams. So I accept it as credible and as a good guiding principle, even if I would go Purdue's too high, Marquette's too high, Maryland's too low. I mean, I could nitpick it, but I still pay close attention to it because I do think, again, history shows – if you are going to be great, you're probably listed in the top 5 or 10 of this list right now. Our national champion, odds are, is 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5. That's what history shows.
Yeah.
The national champion is Michigan State, Kentucky, Louisville, Duke, or Virginia. More often than not, it is one of the preseason top 5 teams at KenPom.
Now, as a reminder, this is a predictive metric, and particularly in the preseason and early parts of the season, it's going off of player data from a season ago, plus, as you mentioned, how good schools have been in the previous 2, 3, 4 seasons overall, and the rankings themselves don't entirely rely on in-season data until we get to about mid-January. So keep that in mind. There will still be preseason influence that affect these rankings as we get games to start the middle of the season. Here are a few notes I had. Oklahoma, I strongly disagree. I think it'll be 8th, 9th, or 10th in the Big 12. He's got Oklahoma 25th. I've got him 71st. And I say that while also admitting, like, I was shocked at how close. I obviously didn't consult these rankings, but when I did mine, a couple of teams were like, I mean, Illinois, we both had 35 right on the button. A big season ahead for Illinois. So I say that to acknowledge that there are some major discrepancies here. Marquette at 17. You said not top 30. I got Marquette 52nd in the country. As I wrote in the capsule, feel free to prove me wrong. But if Marcus Howard is going to be just a complete volume monster, is there enough around him? And there might be, but I don't see a situation or a scenario in which Marquette is a viable top four team in that league. Maybe top five, but them at 17, to me, is probably putting a lot of stock into Howard and how often he was the most valuable player in a game Marquette played last season. I think that probably had some sort of impact overall. Purdue at 7 is high, but given how good they've been, and then they still bring back, I mean, we're going to have our top 101 players published later this week at CBSSports.com. We do have 3 Purdue players on that list, and there, I'm talking off the top of my head, I don't think there are more than 5 teams that can claim the same. So if you want to look at it from that perspective, you know, slotting Purdue as a top 10 team in the preseason, not totally outrageous. So we both have them ranked, but just seven is much, much higher than I would have expected there. And then otherwise, Florida State, but I can give you the exact reason for that. I mean, Florida State over the past 5 years is the third winningest program in the ACC. So if you purely go off of how Pomeroy's rankings value year-over-year success in the big picture, Florida State's inclusion there is not so surprising. But overall, I'd say that's what sticks out most to me, but nothing too crazy. We mentioned Memphis at 50 in the KenPom rankings. I thought that was relatively notable. And then one other team, Parrish. The shine of the Bo Ryan era is completely washed off of Wisconsin, maybe been replaced by Purdue, because you'll recall that without fail, Wisconsin, and Pomeroy's talked about this a couple of times in years past, Wisconsin just had a way of breaking his system. In fact, I'm almost entirely sure this is correct. He even tweaked his rankings to not overvalue Wisconsin because there had gotten to be such a point where just it was busting through the wall no matter what here. Well, that's no longer the case. I mean, Wisconsin is 45th in his rankings. That's lower than I have them. They lose Ethan Happ, but I've got the Badgers at 28 overall. That was just lower than I expect him to be, but things have changed under Greg Gard. They don't have Happ. That he's a significant player. I mean, he was probably one of the three or four most valuable KenPom players last season, Parrish. So they're just a team, maybe alongside Purdue, that I'll be intrigued to follow to see how the metrics rate them going forward, because whereas Wisconsin was almost untouchable as a top 15 team every single season, that has now clearly changed.
So it's always fun to, once all of this preseason stuff is out, to sort of look at it and contrast and compare. And so if you haven't checked it out yourself, Norlander's 1-353 is at CBSSports.com. You can get the KenPom ratings at KenPom.com. You don't even have to have a subscription to look at the 1-353 there, although you can get one for less than $20 a year. And if you're a serious college basketball fan, you should have a $20 subscription to KenPom. It makes you smarter, and really does. It's an invaluable tool for anybody who considers themselves a serious college basketball fan. Again, you can check that out at KenPom.com. Our conference previews are up over at CBSSports.com. We'll have the top 101 players list publishing a little later on this week. So a lot of content, a lot of preseason rankings, AP poll. When the coaches poll comes out, it'll all be at CBSSports.com. So go check that stuff out when you get a chance. Before we get out of here, I did want to touch on some news from Monday night, and that's that Kansas and Missouri are going to renew their men's basketball rivalry. Obviously, they were conference colleagues for a long time in the Big 12. Missouri left for the SEC. Kansas's approach at that point was basically, if they wanted to play us, they could have stayed in our league. They wanted to go be in somebody else's league, then they can go do that. But ultimately, whatever issues were rooted in that have been trumped by, let's give our fans a game that they want. And so it's a six-year deal starting next season at the Sprint Center. After that, it'll next year be in Lawrence, then Columbia, then Lawrence, then Columbia, then back at the Sprint Center. Six consecutive years we'll get Kansas, Missouri, and I love these regional rivalries. I know that some coaches want to play a quote unquote national schedule and don't think they gain anything by playing people in their own region in the non-league, but I just fundamentally disagree. If you know, ultimately this is about entertainment, and if it's a game that your fans want, because the universities are close in proximity, in this case, share a border, then if you can make it work, make it work. And so shouts to Kansas, shouts to Missouri. You know, whether it was Bill and Konzo who got involved in this or whatever level it was done, it's a good thing. This is something the fans want, and it's something that, you know, makes college basketball better. College basketball doesn't need Kansas and Missouri to play, to exist. But if you can get enough Kansas and Missouris and, you know, border rivals like that or in-state rivals to play in the, you know, every November and December, it is a more entertaining non-league basketball schedule than we otherwise would have.
Trivia time.
Okay.
So this will be when they play next season. It'll be the first time Missouri and Kansas have played since the rivalry, now, as we understand it, temporarily ceased. Can you name, first of all, do you remember the last time they played?
It would have been the last year they were in.
Right, but like, do you remember the game? Do you remember the game or not?
No.
Okay, well, it was Kansas, Missouri fans were throwing their arms up in the air. It was, I remember, first, it was an epic game. Because at the time, we knew unless they were going to meet in the Big 12 tournament, it was going to be the final time they play for the foreseeable future. And they wound up playing an absolute classic. I only remember it because I was at UConn for a game later that day between Syracuse and UConn, which wound up being a really good game. And before that game tipped, the Kansas-Missouri game went to overtime, and it was on the TV in the hallways of Gamble Pavilion there, and it was just an awesome game. So the last time I played was 2012. Kansas. All right, so the trivia time is this. Who was Kansas's best player, and who was Missouri's best player the last time they played? Let's just see if you can get either one of those.
2012.
2012 was the Missouri team that lost to Norfolk State in the NCAA tournament as a two seed.
Is that – I'm just – Thomas Robinson?
Dick, you are bingo bango on the money. Thomas Robinson was by far Kansas's best player that season, but they also, that team also had Tyshawn Taylor, Elijah Johnson, Jeff Withey, one of my 40 favorite college players of the past decade. Love me some Jeff Withey. That was the majority of Kansas. What about who was on that Missouri team, GP?
I don't remember. Marcus Dinman?
First of all, yes. Yes.
I swear to God, I'm not cheating.
No, I know you're not. I know you. But there's also a particular player on that team who now happens to be a coach who might be a bit offended if he's listening to this podcast and you can't remember that he was on the team.
Kimmy English.
Kimmy English was on that team. Really just a role player at best, though. We both know that. I mean,
what?
The team wasn't the team went 30-5 with or without him. I don't think that would have made much of a difference there. And I think he knows that, too. Michael Dixon, really good. Phil Pressey, the last great Missouri team. And they lost that game 87-86 in overtime at Allen Fieldhouse in what I think Kansas and Missouri fans would tell you is one of the three best games or so in the history of that rivalry, and now it gets reignited next season. What's interesting about next season is we could have, Parrish, we could really have a situation in which that game is the thing that Kansas fans can hang their cap on, because we could have Kansas be ineligible for the NCAA tournament next season. So if that's the case, the return of the Missouri game just becomes ultimately one of the highlights if, in fact, the NCAA opts to sanction and ban the Jayhawks from the 2021 tournament, which I think is a possibility. And if that's the case, well, then the return of the Kansas-Missouri rivalry just comes at a good time, because it would, if nothing else, it's just the return of potential bragging rights. And Missouri, I actually do think, will be better next season. So I think that will set up for a pretty great reintroduction to the rivalry.
Prediction.
Prediction.
Kansas, and we'll close with this, okay. Kansas will be banned from the 2021 NCAA tournament. Norlander, yes or no?
I'm going to offer my answer, but you got to offer yours as well, okay? We're both going on the record here.
Sure.
Yeah, okay. I love that this – I'll make the prediction here and we'll get out of here. But I do absolutely love that this is returning. It does. The sport doesn't need it, but it is so much better to have it, and they did it for 6 years, four of them on campus. Just great stuff. I love it. Kansas fans are like – I don't need it. Stop it. Okay. Like, this is a tremendous thing to have back. My prediction is, yes, Kansas will, when the process goes through, the NCAA will opt to ban the Kansas Jayhawks from the 2021 NCAA tournament. What about you?
I agree. I do not think Kansas will be eligible for the 2021 NCAA tournament. So perhaps their Super Bowl, as you put it, will be Kansas, Missouri, at the Sprint Center, because I don't think we'll get Kansas in the 2021 NCAA tournament. But as always, we'll see. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry MF and Teagle. He's a legend. Shouts to Larnell. Please go subscribe to the CBS Sports Ion College Basketball Podcast via Apple Podcast. You can rate it favorably while you're there. It really does help us. So thank you guys to those of you who have done it. We appreciate it. If you haven't done it yet, please go subscribe. Please go rate it favorably. 5 stars, nice comments. We appreciate you doing it, and we'll talk to you next week. Till then, take care.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.